Welcome to episode 3 of AV Magazine's newly revamped podcast, Making Waves. I'm Dave Allen, commercial director of AV Magazine, and I'm co-hosting today with my colleague, the infamous David Berman, head of multimedia.
Hi, David.
Hello, David. Today, we are joined by two fantastic individuals, an AV Awards winner, Faye Bennett of Faye Bennett Consultancy Services. Welcome, Faye.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. And Ifat Chowdhury of Involve and the brilliant What If podcast. Welcome, Ifat.
Thank you so much, David.
So before we get into the nitty-gritty of our conversation today, Faye, massive congratulations on being crowned Consultancy of the Year. How does it feel? What does it mean to you and your business?
Wow, okay. Well, firstly, thanks for having me today.
You're welcome.
Really great to be here with you and Ifat. It's quite hard to describe, really. I think a bit of a dream come true, and I by no means say that lightly. You know, I only started the company less than 5 years ago, and back then in 2019, it was just an idea. The whole service-based consultancy was something that I felt very passionate about after working with manufacturers and after having quite a lot of exposure to the channel and hearing from integrators and other AV businesses what it meant to them. So starting the business from this little idea and something that I really believed in is very different to getting a business up and running and making sure it's got legs and it does what it does in terms of revenue generation and creating value and really making an impact. So actually less than 5 years on to actually be winning an award for Consultancy of the Year is incredible. And it was a bit of a pinch me moment really to feel like I'd come that far in what I'd built with the business, but also just to feel like it had been recognised for having the kind of value that I always believed it could. I really feel very grateful to AV Magazine, but also the judges and all those people who really read the submission and engaged with it and really understood what the business is trying to do in the industry, and that's really humbling.
Excellent, thank you for that. Ifat, welcome. You're back for the second time.
Yes, like a bad penny, I'm back. do you know what just took me back was I had the privilege of sitting next to Faye when they called out her name, and just she was absolutely shaking with excitement, nerves, and everything. But I think. I think maybe you don't realise how much support you have in the industry because people were on their feet, absolutely championing you. And it was such a hard category because there were some really good people you were up against. So amazing, absolutely amazing.
Yeah, thank you. I'm still getting over it.
And in terms of like that preparation, even taking the step to put your company... It's a vulnerable moment to actually say, right, we're actually going to have a go. We're going to put ourselves up for this award. How was that process for you? Because that's a leap of faith.
Yeah, it is. And I think, you know, it is an opportunity to obviously put in an award submission. But I felt like it was really helpful for me personally because it gave me a chance to reflect on the last few years and really remember how it started and why it started. So to be able to kind of go back there and then sort of go through the process with the clients we've worked with and the people we've engaged with and the leadership teams who've been really bought into the process of developing service for all the right reasons. You know, it was just a really nice time to reflect on that and say, actually, you know, I don't know if I would have sat down and gone through that journey had I not been preparing something to put into AV Magazine for that. So, yeah, that was in itself, that process was really kind of quite helpful for me too.
That's amazing. Absolutely.
And it's a huge amount of work, isn't it, to put in a compelling entry?
Yeah, I think it is. I think, you know, there's part of it is telling your story and really trying to get across why it's important and why you believe in it and why it's passionate. Well, you're passionate about it, but then that's not a given that that's going to win you an award, you know. And it was kind of pulling together testimonials and hearing from past customers and also people in the industry who really sort of felt like this was a good direction for the consultancy side of the industry to be taking as well.
And I think it's a tremendous achievement to just be shortlisted, right?
Yeah.
I mean, winning it is obviously the cherry on top. But given the amount that goes into a submission and the judging process and all of that, I do think anyone who is shortlisted should really applaud their journey too. It's hard work.
Yeah.
You've done really well, and I mean, it's testament to yourself. And like I say, it's been a hard slog over the last 5 years. How fundamental do you think the role of a consultancy is in the AV industry at this moment in time?
I think it's really important. I think it's they're really kind of the eyes and the ears and the messengers really for the end user. And I think, you know, the position that they hold between end user and integrator or provider of services or whatever that looks like is really key. And I think the key role of being a consultant is really understanding the customer, you know, what's going on, why are they looking to change what they need to change, why are they looking to implement AV systems, what are they trying to do and where's that coming from, you know, what's the source of that. And I think a lot of the work that we do is really trying to get down to those pain points, get to those challenges, to try and make sure that we're creating value by helping to solutionize that. And I think the consultant's role is really, really important in an industry where we've obviously got quite a big supply chain. We've got, you know, it's quite a complex model that we work with. And I think sometimes we can get really focused on the product and the features. And sometimes I think we can lose sight of what the real value is for end users and what they're trying to achieve and what they're trying to change. And that might be anything from working towards a sustainability goal, so they want to do something a little bit different with AV, to assessing their real estate options and whether they keep their skyscraper or they move to a smaller premises. You know, and I think the crux of it is really understanding the end user customers to say, what do you need and what do you want and what's causing you pain now that we can try and resolve with what we're trying to implement as a technology partner.
And how do you deal with the ones who don't know what they want?
And well, I think that's the role really of the consultant, to try and tease that out. And a lot of work, we never do any engagements where we don't start with discovery. So we'll sit down with our clients, whether they're manufacturers, distribution, integrators, end users, and we take that time to really delve into their business. So we'll talk to various different departments, different teams, everyone from leadership to sales to marketing to service and IT, to really understand what is current state. You know, where are you now? And then where do you want to be? And where are the challenges and hindrances that you find in getting to where you want to be? And I really do believe that only through doing that discovery work, you then look at recommending whether that's solutions or service or how they get the most out of their investments. You've got to start with what's important to them.
And how receptive are they to that?
I think normally we find pretty receptive, because I think it's still quite rare that people go in as objective outsiders to say, let me understand your business without the trees in the woods, you know, with that real objective outside in perspective to say, I really want to drill down into how your IT manages your AV estate. I really want to understand what your leadership goals are and what the big pain points for your C-suite. I really want to understand what your users are experiencing with the AV and how that's working for them or not. And then how all those things are playing into your strategic objectives, whether it's getting people back in the office or working towards other big goals. And I think people are receptive to that, and what they want to have their opportunity to say something and talk about the challenges. So we find much of the time we can get clients talking, and then it just kind of rolls on because people want to have their voice and want to have their say about what they need.
And Faye, it's a bit of a generalisation, but what are the sort of trends you're picking up at the moment? What do people want? How is IT handling AV? How is the C-suite, and how are the users, and how's the move that we're currently seeing in the office, hybrid working, work from home?
Yeah, I think it's quite a complex picture. I think, you know, there's some end users that we work with who are really looking at how they get the most value from their AV investments. And that's not necessarily a return of investment in monetary terms. You know, a lot are looking at that, how they can monetize their assets. But others are really just having a look at what value their AV estates are providing to them at the moment. And one of the big things that's lacking in that picture is quantitative data. You know, how often are rooms and spaces being used? How is the technology being used? Is the technology being used at all? Mm. And actually, I was talking to somebody the other day who was in the office and said, oh, I had a catch up with my manager. I said, well, what did you use? What meeting room did you use? And what technology did you use? And he said, well, nothing, you know. So I don't think we've yet got a good idea of how people are using their spaces and using their technology, and if they're using it at all and in the right ways. And then you've obviously got, you know, big boardrooms in corporate offices that maybe are occupied by two people having a catch-up or a chat. Mm. And I think there's some real power in starting to collate that data about how these spaces and technology is being used to help drive strategic decisions moving forward for C-suite and you know, those leadership teams.
On what you just said, do you think there was a big thing about screen fatigue, where people were just sick of having to be on camera all the time? Obviously now we've got a bit less of working from home, so there is more in person. But do you think that technology fatigue is a thing in that case?
Yeah, I think it definitely got to that point, I think, where people were just, you know, kind of on that that kind of platform all the time. And I think it was tiring. And I think the lack of variety as well, you know, when you're sat in front of your screen like that, talking to people in that kind of way for sort of 8 to 10 hours a day, I think that is hard. And I think what we need to remember through all this is we're all humans, right? And we all kind of like the variety, and we want to engage and we want to talk to people. And, you know, certainly in some of the work that we do, we'll only do discovery sessions in person, you know, because there's so much else you pick up on in terms of body language or nuance or a slight glance this way or a slight glance that way. And that's all information that you need to try and collate to really get that full thing. So there's a lot to be said for in person. Obviously, the hybrid thing is going to stick around, I'm sure, because there is a complex picture around getting people to the office and people wanting to do that or not. And I think it's just finding healthy levels of that, you know, screen time and that online time as well.
Ifat, what are you hearing from your network in relation to the ongoings in the market at the moment, and perspective from what Faye's just been saying there in relation to the consultancy side, in terms of the way of people looking to work and transitions?
It's really interesting. So I'm in a remote role. Mm. So, contractually, I'm not office based. I absolutely love it when I go to the office, but I think I'm quite disruptive. I definitely get more done when I'm at home. And I think those in the office probably think, roll their eyes, like, oh God, I'm not going to get anything done because she's in. Mm. So there's still that element where it's a bit of a novelty for a lot of people to go into an office environment to work. That still seems to be the case. A lot of people I know have now settled into a 3-day, 2-day kind of pattern where they're in a fixed office for part of the week. And I think we're still not, it's just not hard and fast. Mm. I wonder if it ever will be. Certainly for the organisation I work for at Involve, obviously, there are some roles that have to be office-based or have to be on-site, and that's fine. But for everyone in between, we're kind of allowed to, dare I say, be a grown-up and make a judgment on what's good for you. And sometimes that also means going to the office because you need to see people, because to break that isolation, whether that's once a month or if you need it more or less or whatever. Because exactly what Faye was saying, sometimes you just don't get everything. You need to pick up on each other's body language, and sometimes if you're working on a project, if I'm working on a bid, for example, sometimes it's nice to have that war room environment where you're all sat around a big table and you're working on it together, and you say, what about this, what about that? You just can't replicate that.
Each other, don't you? Yeah.
You can't really replicate that. And certainly in the work that I do, it is about bringing in fact, every tender, I've got a different group of people that are working together, pretty much. So it's hard to do that remotely.
And also for onboarding, I think it was only until fairly recently I was still meeting people in the kitchen that had worked here for quite a long time that I'd never actually met in the flesh.
Yeah.
But the training, the onboarding new staff, actually can't, brings us on to that next point, doesn't it, actually, Dave?
Ask away, David.
Well, about how are we ensuring that we're getting the best people possible joining us in the AV industry?
Well, and I'm going to, can I add something to that?
Of course.
Because I know we're losing people as well. It's revolving doors, isn't it, in some places. But I think it's the same issue. Retention is a huge issue, as well as attraction.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it takes a bit of a fresh look, I think, about how we do that. And I think we're quite unique as an industry because we've actually got all the tools to put something really great together. You know, we've got the audio skill set, we've got the visual skill set, we've got producers and that kind of thing within the industry to be able to create something really inspiring to go out on LinkedIn or maybe on TikTok or various other channels to actually reach newer audiences, maybe younger audiences, to say, look, this is AV. You could be working in a great big stadium. You could be working at a live events gig. You could, you know, we've actually got all the skill set and all the tools within our industry to come together to put something really inspiring together to actually get people to recognize the industry. Because it's still an unknown, I think. You know, when I talk to friends about working in AV, they're like, you know, there's kind of like little smiles and nods, but I don't think anybody really knows. And certainly, you know, you talk to kind of peers in the industry and like 98% fell into it, you know. So I just don't think we've got the visibility of what's possible working in the industry. And it's so diverse internally in terms of the roles that are on offer, you know, whether you can go down a sales or commercial route or a technical route or, you know, even some of those key departments like HR and finance. And you know, there really is so much on offer with the industry, but we're just not getting the message out, and we're not getting the message out in the appropriate channels to attract the kind of demographics that we want. But we're fully equipped to do that, and it just needs
somebody. It's strange considering the sector we work in, the industry we're in, the technology at our disposal. Why aren't we using those route to market?
Right.
It's very similar to the awards entry, isn't it?
It's
storytelling, which is kind of what the AV industry does really, really well.
Yeah.
So, bit of breaking news that I don't think I'm allowed to share, but I'm going to. Sorry. Big apologies, Owen Ellis and everybody else. But there are a group of us who are actively putting something together.
Right.
Exactly what you've just said. Yeah, more news to follow, but there's a merry band, and there's a bit of work. In fact, we've all been working on it for over a year now, chipping away as well as everything else that we all do, because everyone's really busy. But for exactly the reasons that you've said, we, I think as an industry, are so poor at succession planning, absolutely poor at it. The minute somebody leaves the role, if you talk to any of our recruiter friends, they'll say there's a panic moment of like, this person's left, what do we do? You know, we need somebody with exactly the same skills to come in and just plug that gap, especially when it's a technical role. Instead of thinking, how can we grow our own? And how do we bring in and actually go out to schools, colleges, raise the awareness, start talking about audio visual instead of AV? Because AV could mean many things in different... If you're in the car industry, AV means something completely different. Yeah. So it's... So, yeah, it's an exciting time. We're very close to making that announcement.
Okay.
So I might get my wrist slapped. I don't think I will.
It's brilliant. I mean, I've known some of the people you're alluding to there, and I think it's a brilliant thing, and I can't wait to hear more about it. And... I think that's the biggest thing since I've joined the audiovisual industry, as we just said there. It's that's the thing, that the alarm bell that keeps going off. How do we attract the right people? And it's not just attracting, like you said earlier, we're losing quite a lot of brilliant people to different sectors for a variety of reasons. It's like, why is there suddenly a gear change in them? Go, actually, right, I've been in audiovisual for a long period of time now, time to move on. Or trying to bring people, and as you said, trying to bring people in with the same skill set, same mindset. We're not all robots. You want to bring someone else in who's got a different vision and mindset to go, actually, have you thought about doing it this way?
And that's where my diversity hat kicks in, right? Because for me, diversity is about having a range of perspectives. I mean, if we look at the four of us talking in this conversation, we've all got different backgrounds. We come from different demographics. We've got different life experiences. We're different ages. There's so much that we can bring to a conversation. And then when you bring that into an organisation, it just makes it much more powerful. But unfortunately, historically, well, we all know our industry is heavily male dominated. Mm-hmm. And to see Faye's success is just, it's that beacon of hope. It literally is for any young female out there who wants to take that leap or thinks, do you know what? I could do that. I could run my own business, or I could, you know, you're going to be looked up to for many years to come, Faye. But even when I look at ethnicity, for example, taking one of the strands, there are not many people in boardrooms, if we look right across our industry, who, you know, it's just not very colourful. So those perspectives are missing from the industry. And so I personally know of a handful of people that I won't name, but could name, who have left because they knew they were never going to progress in their organisations because their face didn't fit, which is really, really sad. Really sad.
Yeah, it is sad. And I think there's a, you know, I joke about, you know, the things that the company does on LinkedIn, you know, and I joke about my face being everywhere and people sick of seeing my face and, you know, travelling around the country and this, that and the other. But I really grew up in my career not seeing women in leadership positions, you know, and I really do believe in you've got to see it to be it.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, having your voice, if at, you know, and having women in leadership positions who can do some of that self-promotion, and it's not comfortable. And I don't think it's actually that comfortable for anyone.
It's actually exhausting.
It is exhausting and it's difficult. But I think it's really important because if you can start showing what's possible, you know, to people who are younger or up and coming or who aspire to be something and they fit a demographic or they fit a profile, then that can only be a really good thing, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the drivers behind sort of why I did, because I just never had that. So it was really always difficult to visualise myself in a leadership position or as an owner of a company or all those kind of things. And it was actually just so much harder to muster all that to get going because there was no examples of
that.
So
we've talked about imposter syndrome before.
Right. It's, you know what, you hear about it, but it's, you know, when you really experience it, it is quite savage, you know, it really can be really impactful to your mental health and, you know, just how you work day to day. And I think it's a huge thing for men and women, actually.
Well, I was going to say to you, Faye, I mean, obviously changing from your previous roles to launching your new business, well, your own business now as a consultant, you've mentioned the imposter syndrome, but how did that feel for you at the time, knowing what you said a minute ago, that there wasn't many females leading the charge or doing their own thing or in leadership roles and things like that? How did that make you feel when you had finally decided to take that plunge?
I think it was definitely hard because it felt like something completely unknown to do. And it felt challenging because I was at a stage in my career where I was like, oh, look around for different jobs. I was ready to move on. And there was really nothing that created that fire in my belly. But I had an idea and I felt very passionate about the service first model. And I really think it was that kept the fire burning because it was really hard. And I'd be out there in the early days talking to people about what I'd done or what I was doing. And it was a bit like, well, yeah, okay, kind of get it, but are you willing to part with your money to have that kind of consultancy service? But I was empowered by the people and the contacts that I'd met and people who were willing to sit with me at that very first ISE in 2019 and have a coffee and just understand what I was doing. But yeah, it was hard to muster. And I think I really leaned on that passion for the subject to say, I know this can work. I know it's got legs. And actually, even on the very first day, I kind of thought, you know what? I'm going to give this a go. You know, I've got nothing to lose. And if I don't do it now, I'll probably not do it. And if it doesn't work, you know what? I'll just go and get a job. I'm not losing any skills from trying this.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to diminish it because it was a brave move. And for anyone thinking about doing it, you know, it is a brave move to pack up your job and say, I'm going to go and launch my own business. But there is, you know, having that courage to do it and really just believing in your idea and doing your homework, you know, being
and
out
you've got
there
to back yourself people. Sometimes.
Yeah, but having the right context and doing your homework and talking to people and realising people are going, yes, we need more. And in my case, it was integrated saying, we need more from manufacturers. We're not getting the right support. You know, your warranty isn't enough. We need more. And actually that kind of really spanned it. But actually not having those people and those women who were clear role models for me made it just, oh, it was just me on my journey and we'll see where I get to. You know, it made it tougher for sure.
But now you're one of those role models for everyone, aren't you?
Well, and then that's weird in itself, you know, because and then that's where the imposter syndrome, which, you know, it's peaks and troughs, right? It never fully goes away. And I would say that, you know, the AV award was incredible for that because, you know, everyone has their wobbles and especially being a sort of solopreneur where I'm on my own a lot and that's not my natural style. This is my natural style, you know, being with people and talking with people. Actually, when I have those dips that go, oh God, what are you doing? You know, actually to say, wait a minute, this isn't just tomfoolery. I've been recognised for doing this and building this and I've got clients who I've provided value to and this is a real thing. So actually winning that award, to come back to your very first question, has been hugely helpful for fending off that imposter syndrome.
So Faye, with all of this now, how's your imposter syndrome?
A little better. I mean, it's never going away, you know, and I think it's something that you manage. And then I think in some ways it can be something positive that you kind of go, well, actually, oh, I'm a bit uncomfortable about this and I feel like a bit of a fraud, but let me spend some time and look back at what I've achieved. And actually that reflection's really important because I think you can manage imposter syndrome by going, hold on a minute, that's not the reality. Let's have a little look at, you know, the companies we've worked with and the people that we know and how far it's all come as a business and as an individual. And that can help. And I think it can breed that kind of reflection, which I think is healthy as well. It's just not letting it get so far into your head that you go, well, enough's enough. Let's go and do something different. You've got to really trust.
Yeah. I think I'd rather be an imposter than complacent.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think, you know, taking bold steps and brave leaps, you know, you're always going to learn something from it. It's never going to be wasted time. And, you know, everyone's failed at something and there's always going to be something that's uncomfortable or maybe doesn't work out as you planned, but you've just got to see that as part of the journey, you know. And I think back now coming up to 5 years, if I'd have stayed where I was at Samsung, which was a fantastic job, I wouldn't be where I was now in terms of my experience or what I've learned or any of that really. And I think, you know, it's worth taking those bold steps. And if they don't go directly to plan, then that's okay too.
Brilliant. No, it's really good to hear. And like I say, congratulations once again. It's fantastic news, not only for yourself, but for the industry and a lot of people looking up to you out there. So we've got a big industry event coming up in the next few weeks, ISE. If that, what are you looking forward to? What have you got planned? What do you like about the event?
Do I give the professional answer or the social answer? It's always about the people, right? We're all going because we want to hang out with each other. And I'm very lucky to, I absolutely hate the word, but I will be based in the Hall 4 all week with ISE at the Influencer Hub. I'm not an influencer. I couldn't influence you to make me a cup of tea this morning. So it's quite a relatively new concept, having some people based at a booth who are able to bring in other people. So I will be pulling people in to have hopefully some recordings for What If. I'm going to be running a session on Wednesday about DEI, so I'm going to do a little roundtable similar to the one we did before. On the Thursday, I'm going to be doing an afternoon session on mental health. So we've touched on those things already in this conversation. And my mission for ISE is really to raise it up another notch, the DEI. I'm going to bang that drum a little bit louder. And bringing in mental health, because the people that I've talked to about their experiences in the DEI umbrella. So when I hear stories of discrimination, the impact on those individuals for their mental health is immense. And we also can't negate that we all have mental health that we have to stay on top of. We've got to work at it all the time. So I'm absolutely humbled that ISE have put that on the agenda, that they've given a space for that. So obviously there are other people who are going to be in the hub as well, who will have more of a technology focus or, you know, whatever else, sector focus for some of them. But mine will be about people, because for me it's humans first. So that week is about people for me.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's just such a good opportunity to get everyone kind of under one roof and you know, spend some time with people and networking and understanding the direction that different companies and different people are taking in the industry. And certainly for me, it's a great opportunity to catch up with past clients to understand where they are on their service journeys that we kind of set out on together. And also talk to those different companies, whether they're integrators or manufacturers or some of the end users that will be there as well, about, you know, how they can really look at, you know, enhancing their service propositions, generating revenue, building a robust sort of revenue, recurring revenue streams into their business, and really just starting to understand the potential of what that could do for their business and how that can drive them forward for sustainable growth. So, you know, there's definitely a mission there to help AV businesses really understand that and also talk to end users about how they get the very most out of their AV investments. You know, what is that return of investment on those things? What is a return of value? How's it helping to drive their business forward? And then, as if it says, just, you know, see all the wonderful people that we have in our industry and catch up and just hear a little bit about what's going on. You know, what's the buzz in the industry? What's next? What's coming? Whether that's technology or initiatives or, you know, how we push together the industry forward by doing things maybe a little bit differently or changing things up or and looking at the next thing.
Well, it's a great event in terms of getting out, as you say, it's about the people, getting out, seeing our clients, new and old, seeing how the technology works. But I think that the key thing you said it there, in fact, for me is the content stream now, looking at different areas of content, engagement with people. It's not just about selling a product or a service. We've got to have the back end. We have got to have this all-encompassing environment for everyone to work towards and be part of, because at the end of the day, let's face it, you spend 90% of your life working, don't you? So you've got to make it a nice, welcoming, enjoyable environment for everyone to be in and be at. Is there anything aside from the people that you're any forms of additional content that you're looking forward to seeing, viewing, that you've heard of, like AI? We talked about it earlier in terms of off before coming in here, actually, about the importance of AI and the impact it's having on the audiovisual sector. Is there anything like that you think yourselves, in terms of the influence that might have moving forward on the sector?
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to talk to some people at the show about what they're doing with AI and if and how they're adopting it. And I think the feeling is, you know, AI is this big thing that's come along that's not going away, and everyone's wanting to see how they can use it. And in some respects, I think it's an interesting one, because I don't think it's necessarily for everyone. And, you know, I think there's some great use cases of having it in a service desk function where it deals with 90% of your simple tickets and then 10% go to real people. But I think you need to think about all these things in context. You know, is that the kind of business that you want to be? You know, if you're a small business that's got great relationships with your customers, do your customers want to be coming into a bot? You know, is that kind of the ethos and the culture of your business? And I think with all these things, and I was talking to you guys earlier about, you know, different technologies that come in, and the tools are great, but how do you implement them? And how do you make them work for your business and how that's made up? And how do you integrate them with what you've already got in place? And how do you use them to create value for your business and for your customers? And I think we need to consider some of the context around these things, instead of just saying, well, that's great tech and that's what the rest of the world is doing and this is how it should be. What is going to work for you and what's going to work for your business and for your customers as well? You know, if we all implement AI in exactly the same way, how are we ever going to differentiate? How are we ever going to get our USPs, and how are we ever going to, you know, continue to grow in a market that's competitive. You know, there's lots of integrators out there, there's lots of manufacturers, you know, everyone's kind of working to do something a little bit differently. And I think we just need to assess all these things generally and in how they're going to work for us and our customers.
I don't think enough people really understand AI either.
That's my worry.
And the fact that it's not new. If you were texting somebody and it replaced the word, that's AI. You know, it's been around for donkeys. So it's and it's only as good as the information humans have given it, right? So if you've got a bot, so you know, and we've all done it, we've probably been online and you want to access some kind of service and immediately, so I put your question in here and say, I didn't understand that, did you mean this? And it can be frustrating if it's in the wrong context. Whereas in another one, it might be, oh, that was great, I didn't have to speak to somebody, I didn't have to be on hold, I could just type in what the issue was and it got resolved. Exactly what you said, it's got to be fit for purpose. But yeah, it's understanding the user, but it's understanding, it's getting them to understand what they want to achieve.
Right, and understand the value as well. I think everything that we do in our industry, wherever we sit in the industry and across every industry, it's about creating value, right? So how are we going to use these tools and these new, you know, technologies and, you know, whatever comes along next, how are we going to use it to create value? And that's not just by, you know, signing up for a subscription on it. You know, I think we just need to give these things a little bit more in-depth thought and see how they're going to work for us.
I'm massively excited about seeing the stuff at ISE because AI plays quite a big role in my career at the moment, you know, automated studio broadcasts. There's a lot of options out there. I was really worried a couple of years back when I was talking to somebody who was making PTZ cameras and I was going, well, you're going to put me out of a job as a video journalist. And that's fine, they're tools, but we can't replace Dave sitting there hosting this conversation.
Or you, David.
Or me, thank you, doing the engineering and pushing the buttons. But a lot of that button pushing, hopefully, is taken care of because the microphones have actually built in noise cancellation. So we've got a lot of tech that's going with us. And that's something I spend most of my time at ISE or Infocom looking at the new boxes and the new screens. And there's some very exciting stuff coming up. I'm really looking forward to seeing what the engineers have got for us to look at. I think it's quite exciting.
Yeah, and I think what's exciting about that as well, just as you said, Dave, is, you know, you kind of start, when these technologies start to come in that kind of replace some of the little bits that you've done in the past, you get to kind of reassess your own role and say, okay, well, that's a bit taken care of, then how can I do things a bit differently and how can I push the boundaries on what I can do and kind of what's human about me that I can really start leveraging it because I've been able to pass that small piece of something off to the new technology. And I think, you know, there's a lot of fear and trepidation around AI taking jobs and, you know, all that kind of bump around it, but actually it is an opportunity for us to look at our roles and go, oh, okay, well, if that's going to take care of that, how can I really maximise on this piece? And how can I drive more value from my customers because I've got more time to do that? And we see that with AI implementation on service desks. You know, how can you alleviate your staff to really create value elsewhere that they've never had time for? So that's quite an exciting piece as well. You know, if you understand what technology can do, then what is that going to empower you to do, which you've never been able to before because you've been doing all those things that were never possible with tech?
Fantastic. Thank you very much. So I'm going to do a little plug here quickly before we finish off. ISE, after a hard day's work, on the Wednesday between 5 and 7, come to our stand 5B750 for our cocktail party, sponsored kindly by Absom. But quickly before we go, Faye, I ask two questions of every guest. Number one, how would you describe the AV industry with respect to its people and attitudes?
So I think it's quite exciting. I think it's quite an exciting time. I think people are really starting to develop within the industry. I think we're really starting to pay heed to some of these other things that are coming around, like technology, like DE&I. And I think people are starting to get a real appetite for kind of what's new and how we can drive forward. And I think it's an exciting time. But also I think it's a small industry and that means that the relationships are great. You know, people have got people's back. People know people, you know. Not long ago in December, I went to a networking event in a niche area of our industry. And it was so strange to be in a room where I didn't know sort of 80% of the people and I could pick up conversations where I'd left off. And I think there's a real power to that, you know, how we are as an industry and actually how can we leverage that and come together in new and different ways to kind of drive forward some of these key things that we want to look at in future.
And the final question, what change, if any, would you like to see?
I mean, this kind of comes into the ethos of how FBCS works, really. But it's be bold, be brave. Let's start pushing the boundaries on some of these things, you know. Well, especially if we're in a market where, you know, in some ways a screen is a screen is a screen, you know. How are you going to really compete with that? How are you going to push forward? Like, where are your USPs? Mm. I think we need to all think out of the box a little bit, whether that's about attracting talent or moving into new realms of what's possible with emerging technologies. But let's be bold, let's be excited and creative and actually do something that's a bit different. And it's trial and error, right? It might not always work, but you could just alight on something that's amazing.
Trial and improvement.
Yes, trial and improvement. I like that. I love trial that.
Yeah. If anything you'd like to add to that quickly before we go?
No, I concur.
You concur, fantastic. Well, thank you very much for being my guest today. And for those listening, if you do have any questions about this episode or any future ones, please drop us a line at makingwaves@avmag.co.uk. Thank you.